Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Dahlmer sitting in from the left corner. Tried to spin it in behind the net and did. Ponick's got it there. Rolling around. Fed the high slot. King. Now he deeks. He moves toward the net and shoots. Oh, it rolls just by the net. Rebound. Score! Patrick Kane with a wraparound goal in overtime. His first goal in the playoffs. Woo-hoo! And the Hawks beat the Blues in double overtime. 4-3. And this series is going back to the United Center for Game 6 on Saturday. Hawks win in double overtime down here in St. Louis.
Never a doubt. Had him right where we wanted him. Well, let's put the skates on the other foot. Shall we? Shall we put the skates on the other foot? Now you're the Blues. Now you got to come back here Saturday night. You can feel cocky that you won two here, but now you got to come back and you got to win another one here. I don't know if you feel so good now.
I don't think so.
If you don't win Saturday night, now who's the pressure's all on the Blues.
Absolutely.
Two to make one.
They want no part of Game 7.
Big, big, big Hawks win last night. And finally, that annoying little puck starts to bounce our way.
Finally,
with like 4/10 of a second left, you get a goal that you wouldn't have gotten. By the way, you don't get that third goal. Game ends in regulation.
Correct. Yeah. Correct.
So that goes our way. Give up a couple in the third. Really frustrating.
They
come out smoking in the first overtime.
How about the too many men penalty with, 4 minutes to go?
Oof.
Are you thinking this is how it? This isn't the way you want to go out.
Yeah, but they fought it off.
Yes, they did.
Fought it off.
Yes, they did.
And then Kaner, who was so frustrated, finally cracks the egg. Fantastic.
And maybe that's just the start for him.
Now, let's not kid ourselves. Yes, I'm tired, but it's a good kind of tired.
Yeah.
6-11, Hawks win. Game 5-6 tomorrow night. I don't know. What are we doing pregame? Are you and I doing it again?
I believe the beat will be there starting at 3 o'clock. And then the game is at 7 tomorrow night.
7. I thought it was 8. 7 o'clock?
7 o'clock.
Okay.
Good. Early start.
So you're saying we're not needed?
No.
Because I thought our pregame was really good.
I thought it was excellent. Yeah. But I think they're holding us in abeyance for future games.
Seems cocky.
Yeah.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But you guys are okay with that, I'm sure.
Right now, I'm just hoping to be awake at 10 a.m.
Oh, no.
You have all weekend to sleep. You'll be fine.
Well, how do you know?
What do you mean?
Well, I could have a lot of things going on this weekend.
Oh.
But if it were Monday.
I mean, I don't, but I could. The point is I could have a lot of things going on this weekend.
There's golf to be played.
Yeah, it's going to be beautiful Sunday.
Yeah.
What did you say?
Would you not feel worse if it were Monday morning and you had been up at 12:30 watching the end of the game?
Oh, 12:30 was later than that. My game ended at 1:15, 2:30, 2:30. Oh, that's right. I watched a little post game. I couldn't sleep.
Oh. Okay, then.
It's my own fault.
Your own fault.
The other big bit of news today is obvious, the death of Prince. Here's how you know how big Prince was. Yesterday at 2:30 on Fox News, I want you to let this sink in for a second. You think about the scope of an artist's impact. On Fox News yesterday at 2:30, 2:45, Shepard Smith was commenting on Cream.
Yeah.
By Prince. Okay, if you have Fox News playing Cream, a song, frankly, that shouldn't be played on TV, talking about the impact of Prince, you probably had a pretty good run.
I was on iTunes yesterday downloading so many Prince songs that really hit me.
Well, I was lucky enough to be around in Minneapolis from 88 to 93, 94 actually, when he was really at the peak of his powers. And people don't understand this. All of music was centered in Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. And I love Minneapolis, St. Paul, but let's be honest, winter is 9.5 months. And the idea that you would have all of music centered there, because I'll tell you right now, Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis, two of the most influential producers ever, they come from Prince. Mm-hmm. And if Prince doesn't have those guys, Janet Jackson doesn't have Rhythm Nation, Rhythm Nation isn't done in Minneapolis, all of the coolest music was done in Minneapolis. And the reason? Because Prince didn't leave Minnesota.
That's right.
Yeah, it's cold. Yeah, as a matter of fact, there are snowstorms in Minneapolis that were taller than Prince twice a year. And yet all of music was centered there. And, you know, I kid around all the time about the long talks we had, but I was lucky to, you know, be around Paisley Park and run into him a bunch of times. And he was a man of few words, but he was a funky little genius.
Did you hear they were interviewing all over the media yesterday? ABC News was interviewing. They were outside Paisley Park and people had started leaving flowers and, you know, candles and whatnot. And they were interviewing some of the people and they were all ages, all colors. Sure. And they were interviewing this white woman who was probably in her late 60s crying, saying, "We just saw him on Saturday."
Yeah.
You know, he was a fixture in the town, too.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, well, the Chanhassen, and look, I haven't been back to Chanhassen in 20 years.
Yeah.
But Chanhassen, it was a farm field. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm sure there's Walgreens and you know, Home Depots and Bed Baths and Beyonds that have popped up. But Paisley Park is this cool, funky building that's a combination of his living quarters, the business of Prince, and multiple studios, and this amazing staging area. Like, you'd walk in, and there's a lead-in to this. It's like a theater, but it's this open space, big old black box kind of thing. And I'm pretty sure you could get 500 people in there, maybe more. Mm-hmm. So there are a bunch of after parties in there. And it was a completely functional soundstage with amazing acoustics. And all this going on every day inside of what was called Paisley Park. But I'm telling you, it's in the middle of a farm field. Yeah. There's nothing in Chanhassen in 1994 other than Prince's Paisley Park. And I don't know what's built up around there. But look, it's just depressing as hell is what it is.
It's so sad.
Because here's the thing. He would have been the coolest old blues man. I would love to have seen Prince at 75 or 85 years old just sitting there playing a guitar, just ripping it.
One of my biggest regrets, I see a lot of shows and a lot of concerts. I never saw him in concert.
No, he's great.
Saw him. I know.
Fantastic.
But the skyline will be purple. They started it last night. It will be purple again tonight. The United Center is going to be lit in purple as well.
There was a rainbow over Paisley Park yesterday morning.
Yeah, Ryan Burrell posted that.
Which was so cool.
I had the opportunity to host him. It was a WGN suite at the Allstate Arena in 2004, and I had the opportunity to host that. And it was awesome. It was a musicology tour that he
yeah,
did.
Yeah, someone took my tickets for that. We won't talk about
it.
It was great.
Who did.
I won't say his name.
It was great. Couple of stories so about good. Prince from the old days coming up, and a bunch of people to talk about him as well this morning. Lou coming up in just a second. We'll do Lou's first call. Jake, you had a good idea yesterday, and I've forgotten it. What were we going to talk to Lou about today? What's our Lou theme?
I would say we were kind of discussing, me and Sandberg, the Mr. Fix-Its that you put, the Mr. Fix-Its you shouldn't put off.
Got it. I like it. There's your theme, kids. Run with it. Pick it up. Call it in. 312-981-7200. Fix-Its you shouldn't put off. Fix-Its you better get on. Fix-Its you could spend money at Lou's Ace Hardware Stores over. 312-981-7200 back after this.
It's Lou's first call with Lou Manfredini and Steve Cochran. Brought to you by American Weathermakers.
American Weathermakers, we won't be comfortable until you are.
Sponsored by American Weathermakers.
It's the time of the show for Lou's first call.
Lou Manfredini live at By the Yard tomorrow from 7 to 10 for a live broadcast of the Mr. Fix-It Show. Prep your yard for spring. Shop By the Yard showroom, breakfast, and all sorts of things. All courtesy of By the Yard. Find more details at WGNradio.com. It's 900 South Milwaukee Avenue in Vernon Hills tomorrow. And your virtual candy jar is up, right?
God bless you. Yeah.
And to you.
My virtual candy jar is on behalf of Misericordia and their Candy Days, which is the last weekend in April. And so I took a page from, you know, John Williams does his virtual kettle around Christmas time.
Yeah.
So we've had...
But John thinks it's real.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
That's right. Okay,
yeah.
Never mind.
He still thinks Thomas Jefferson's alive.
If you go to WGNradio.com/events, you'll get a link to go to this first giving page. And if you would make a donation, our friends at Townstone Financial are going to match it by $5,000.
Oh, that's nice.
We are 74% of the way there. We're trying to get there before the last weekend in April. If you can donate, God bless you. Thank you so much for helping Misericordia. On that last weekend in April, I'll remind you, Steve, and all, that any spare change you have in the car, there'll be volunteers all across Chicagoland trying to collect money for one of their most important fundraisers to keep this facility up and running. And people are just happy. I was there for a little walkathon that they had on the grounds with the residents last weekend with my daughter and wife, and it was just great.
It is great, and you do great work for them, and I appreciate the fact that you do that. By the way, one easy cop out when you roll into the intersections and the people have the you know, are collecting cash.
Right.
Go, I don't have time. The light's about to turn green.
Right.
Here's what you do.
Right.
You have the change in your hand.
Right.
And you roll over to either the far right or the far left lane, depending on where the person is.
And you get a little package of Jelly Bellies.
And you're ready to rock.
Yeah.
So no excuses.
Right.
You get rid of the change in your car.
Thank you.
All right, a couple of quick texts before we get to your first caller. I just found out we have mold in the attic. What do you recommend? Mm-hmm. The house is only 14 years old.
So if you want to try and do something yourself, there's a couple new products on the marketplace. One is called U-Fog, and it is a mold fogger that you can put up in the attic space and turn on and leave, and it will fill the attic space with fumes, and it will attack the mildew and mold and kill it. Now, you do still need to wash it. That same company is from a company called Healthful Home. Makes a cleaner that you can go up there and use, but it will kill the mold, and it's EPA registered and quite effective. If you want to hire somebody, then you want to get a mold remediation company. A place to look for one is the NARI website, which is the National Association of the Remodeling Industry at NARI, NARI.org.
And NARI has a certain standard that they set. So,
correct.
You know, they cut out the scammers.
Right.
Margaret, our friend Margaret from Bridgeport. Dear Stephen Lou, the bear wants to paint the bear cave by throwing paint on the wall. What's the proper way to prepare a wall to paint?
Well, remember this, that any good paint job, 90% of it is due to the prep work.
Mm.
And so washing the walls is a very important step. There's a lot of dirt and debris that you don't see that's on that wall. Painting over it will not give you good results. You'll get peeling and you know, an inconsistent finish. So if you use something like a spick and span, wash the wall down, then a little wall patch where you've got cracks and holes that you want to patch from taking pictures down, then lightly sand it. The whole idea there is to open up the pores of the film that's there. And then I have to tell you, a lot of these paint and primers that are out there now are terrific, and they've engineered them very well. So paints like Valspar Optimus, Clark and Kensington, even the Benjamin Moore line, really good stuff.
All right, let's get to Ken standing by, your first caller. And Ken, by the way, you, my friend, are a big winner. Do you feel like a winner, Ken?
Oh, every morning I wake up.
Yes, and by the way, congratulations. Congratulations on waking up.
It's a winning day. I'm awake. I'm a winner.
And you've won an April Air Wi-Fi thermostat, allowing you to adjust the temperature of home's air on your smartphone. Brought to you by American Weathermakers, home of the 60-Minute Man. It's H5855. Or H855-955-HVAC. What's your question for Lou? All right, good one. Ken, what's your question for Lou? Well, we got a bad phone line.
Bummer.
All right, so let's go to the theme. Here's the theme with a couple quickies from you, Lou. And okay. Give Ken the prize anyway whenever his phone comes back. The theme today is things Mr. Fix-It would never put off. Things Mr. Fix-It would never put up. Mr. Fix-It things that we ought to be doing and stop procrastinating about them.
Well, leaks is one of them that always gets worse. So, you know, if you've got a leak in the basement, and I hear it from people all the time, well, you know, it only leaks when it rains from the west. I'm like, okay, well, that happens all the time. And putting that off will just make the process worse and cause more problems. The same is true if you have leaks in the roof. That's something you just have to get on right away. Or, you know, a little leak under the sink where, oh, yeah, I just keep a little bowl under there. It's fine. Those are things you have to address almost automatically when they occur.
Funny you say that, Lou. A texter. Lou, sorry about the stupid question, but is a roofer needed for the interior roof of the garage? In other words, I've got a leak inside the garage with the roof in two different spots. Do I need a regular roofer, a specialty roofer, and is there an insurance claim here?
Yeah. I doubt that there's an insurance claim unless the leak was due to some sort of atmospheric thing, like if there's a hailstorm or a big windstorm.
Okay.
You know, typically good roofing contractors offer repairs, and the biggest problem now is that as the weather breaks, it's difficult to get the guys out there to do those repairs because they're doing whole roofs, but you just have to get on the schedule. So the idea is like, well, I'll just call them when I can. And all of a sudden you make a call and they're like, yeah, we can get there sometime in July.
Yeah.
So you really want to get on everyone's schedule.
We talk about pests every week, and you like the pest control route or are the products I could pick up at my local Ace?
Well, it really is up to your comfort level. The one thing I will tell you is when you get professionals, the chemicals that they use are a little more aggressive because they're registered and trained to use them. Now, some people don't like that idea in the fact that, you know, these are harsh chemicals today. Today's Earth Day, and so you know, everybody's talking about, you know, trying to use more natural or lower VOC products. If you want, you have to remember that when it comes to dealing with ants or any kind of insects in your home, it isn't the type of thing that you can put right down and say, oh, I'm going to solve the problem. It's a process. And just like the pros will say, okay, we're going to put this down. I'll see you in 2 weeks. So if you're going to try and do it yourself and go to the hardware store and find those products, when you read the instructions, it'll say, look, do this for a week or do this for a week and a half or 2 weeks. And if you follow that, you'll solve the problem, but it's a little bit of work out of you.
Tomorrow, Lou will be at By the Yard from 7 to 10, live broadcast of the Mr. Fix-It Show from By the Yard in Vernon Hills at 900 South Milwaukee Avenue. And again, WGNradio.com/events for details. The Ms. Recordia virtual candy jar, we find it where?
You find it at WGNradio.com/events as well. And you can also go to the First Giving website. But if you go through WGN, it'll link right there. And it's super easy to donate. So thank you all who have donated and those that are considering it. You're awesome.
Have a great weekend, buddy.
You too.
All right. Big story next, 720 WGN. This is the song I was talking about yesterday on Fox News. If you had like the Richard Simmons salad shooter, do you put a little James Brown in? I mean, like classic James Brown, like James Brown at the peak of his powers. You mixing a little Stevie Wonder. Oh, you gotta have a little Earth, Wind, and Fire. A little Earth, Wind, and Fire. Believe it or not, even a little Cool in the Game. You mix it all up, and then you spit it out in the Richard Simmons salad shooter. And you get Miles Davis involved. Well, then you get Prince. Yes, you are. I saw Miles Davis at Paisley Park once.
Did you really?
Yeah, walking. This is the bad celebrity move. I'm walking out. Miles Davis is walking in, and I do like that bad fish hook, where like I forgot something.
Like you're checking something out.
Literally leaving in. And then go, oh, well, oh, wait a second. I think I forgot my keys. 6:46. Let's get traffic. I want to play some songs for you, some clips of songs for you that Prince wrote for other people. You'll be amazed if you're not already aware, and some of you may be, but not many.
One of my favorite songs ever.
Yeah, I know that.
Prince, yeah.
Yeah, people that you go to every concert they do. The Bengals. She's
yep.
a big
oh,
Bengals
here we
fan.
Go, yeah. Maybe I'm just too demanding.
Talking to a friend of mine who was around Minneapolis same time I was in the late 80s and early 90s, and there was a Prince had a nightclub called Glam Slam. Mm-hmm. And he opened up Glam Slam in downtown Minneapolis, and it was, remember I told you I had a purple coat?
I remember the story, yes.
But I bought it because Luther Vandross wore a purple coat, and I saw Prince backstage, and he looked and he goes, mm-hmm, and walked by.
Maybe that was a compliment.
Yeah, no, it wasn't. Yeah, it really wasn't.
You know what's also cool about him, too? When he would perform shows, wherever he would be, Chicago, Minneapolis, wherever, across the world, he was famous for having these after parties where he would go to, in Chicago, the Metro or City Winery. We just had a
party don't start until the concert ends.
Yeah, and he would just play and play into the wee hours of the night. And it was always kind of a challenge to find out where he was going to be. And I remember when he was at City Winery, the last time the line, you know, in the right by United Center, the line just wrapped around the block when people started to find out he was going to be performing there. And, oh, he never disappointed.
No. He was the hardest working man in show business this side of Bruce Springsteen, and died yesterday at the age of 57. The Glam Slam story segues into opening three other Glam Slams. He wasn't great with money. He had this huge fight with Warner Brothers when he became the unpronounceable symbol, the artist formerly known as Prince, and he spent a lot of money. And he had money issues, frankly. But he gave away a lot of money. He was very charitable, never asked for any recognition, was upset with people who would talk about, you know, his charitable stuff, which was a good thing. It's a nice thing. But at one point, one of his people was complaining because he kept hiring friends. Not a great idea. He kept hiring friends, and the Glam Slam Club opened in Miami and had to close on the second night because the guys he had running the Glam Slam left with all the money after the first two nights. And somebody went in and checked, and the cash registers weren't hooked up to anything. They weren't hooked up to terminals. They were just places where you'd put the money until you could take the money.
He was trusting.
So,
too trusting.
Look, he wrote hits for everybody. Everybody. And one of the greatest acts ever. Just nothing but fun on stage. If you remember the movie Purple Rain, you remember Morris Day and the Time. There's a guy with Morris, like Morris's best buddy named Jerome, and Jerome would come out with a mirror, and he'd hold the mirror up to Morris Day just so Morris could check his hair in the mirror. And as soon as he could check his hair in the mirror, then they'd get bound with, and then, of course, The Bird.
Oh, yeah.
Jerk Out, all the classics. Mm-hmm. Prince dated a lot of beautiful women and had a fling with a woman who also passed recently. Vanity. The band was called Vanity Six. I'm looking for a man that'll do it anywhere. Even though I've never seen war. Cause tonight I'm living in a fantasy. My own little nasty world. Tonight, don't you want to come with me? Do you think I'm a nasty girl? Tonight, I'm living in a fantasy. This is all I... This is all, you know, this is all, this is like a club throwback circa 1990, yep. 91, 92.
Loving it.
In the process of Prince going around Minneapolis and various places, he'd run into young talents. One of the kids he discovered is a kid named Tevin Campbell. And Tevin Campbell had a couple of hits and then sort of disappeared. But he had a big hit that Prince wrote back in about 90 or 91. It should have been Mammoth. I don't know what happened to him. It had two hits and he faded away. And there was a blues singer named Johnny Lang. And Johnny Lang was playing a barbecue putt between Chanhassen and Minneapolis. And Prince found him. I think he was 13. And Johnny Lang was playing blues clubs in L.A. and all over the country by the time he was 16 or 17. But they'd have to let him in the back door right before the performance and then take him out afterwards because he wasn't old enough to be in there because he wasn't old enough to drink. How about Andrea's favorite song of all time, also written by Prince? These are the days when you wish your bed was already made. It's just another manic Monday. Wish it was Sunday. How much money have you spent on Bangles concerts through the years?
Bangles, one of my favorite bands of all times. I've seen them so many times. Prince wrote that song as the pseudonym Christopher because he had a crush on Susanna Hoffs. They went on a couple of dates.
Who didn't?
Realized they were just friends. But he wrote that song, and he would make rare appearances on stage with the Bangles in the late 80s, early 90s that song.
He did a lot of uncredited cameos where he'd pop up with people. It's funny.
Yeah, I love how you use
it. And he also reinvented artists.
Yeah.
You know, he brought Mavis back. Mavis Staples. Still singing unbelievably beautifully. And by the way, her friend Greg Kot's going to be on later in the show. But Chaka Khan, Rufus and Chaka Khan had hits back in the day. And there was a period where Chaka Khan didn't have as much going on. And then she connected with Prince and he wrote this. And you go back a while. I mean, I think of like early 80s when I was a kid disc jockey. There were songs that you play on the radio, which you wouldn't find out until much later on, that Prince wrote. Now, Fleetwood Mac was gigantic.
Mm-hmm.
Huge. And then Stevie Nicks breaks off. She does her own thing. Had a big hit with another Prince song. The rumor that those two got together for a little bit. Prince didn't miss much. Listen, if you're short in stature, get yourself a guitar. Learn how to play. That's all I'm saying.
Sheila E. too.
Sheila E., as a matter of fact, Sheila E. and Prince were very close for a long time, and she was with the band for a long time as well, and he wrote a couple of hits for her. This one's my favorite. That's what we are. We all wanna love song. Everything's thumping with Prince, you know what I mean? One of my favorite things I've ever seen, you know, because you get, you know, we're lucky. And if you get to see a lot of music live, and I used to go to a lot of live shows. I don't anymore because, you know. But, you know, I'm old. One of the coolest things ever, there was a club in Minneapolis called Rupert's. And Rupert's is a great little restaurant, nightclub kind of joint, and with a stage, performance club. And a lot of acts came through there, but it was a small venue, an intimate venue. And got a call, and I was doing a morning show at KDWB. KDWB was a great radio station. We had just great talent up and down the dial, or up and down the lineup of the station. And we had a great run in Minnesota in the midst of all of this stuff in the peak Prince years. So you know how it feels at 2 or 2:30 after getting up at this hour to do a show. And at 2:30 in the afternoon, even when I was 30 years old, I'd go, I don't want to do anything. But I got a call that said, you got to get back to Rupert's. Prince is playing a show. And I knew Rupert's to be this small club because I'd done some things there. Well, I show up and I figure it's going to be a couple hundred people. It's 30 people with Prince and a baby grand piano. And he played for an hour and a half. It was just unbelievable.
It's awesome.
And one of the songs he played, which was a huge hit for a one-time type named Sinead O'Connor, was a song that he wrote that he gave to her because he decided it sounded better when she sang it. But nothing, I said nothing can take away this blues, 'cause nothing compares, nothing compares to you. And if you went to a Prince show, there wasn't a lot of chatter between songs. He didn't talk that much, you know what I'm saying? But I love this song. It's one of the great heartbreak love songs of all time. And beautiful girl, Sinead O'Connor.
Very much so.
Yeah. Had some issues.
Yeah.
Had some issues.
A little disturbed.
Including a hair loss thing, which was of her own making. Can you imagine what she, you know, to grow the hair, kid? Come on.
Not to mention the Pope.
Yeah, the Pope tearing up the picture of the Pope on Saturday Night Live. Amazing. Anyway, those are all songs Prince wrote for other people. We'll play Prince music all morning long, play clips of stuff. Greg Kot will be on at 7:40, talking about the impact of Prince. After 8, more on your Blackhawks headed for Game 6 tomorrow night, and you'll hear it here. Troy Murray joins us this morning as well. Coming up, news next, 7:20 WGN. Remember Sheena Easton? You got the look. You walked in, I woke up. I've never seen a pretty girl look so tough, baby. You got that look. I call you peach and black. Color me taking her back. Crucial. Color you peach and black. Color me taking her back. Come on. That's good. 7:13, Remembering Prince, and my friend Dr. Kevin Most joins us, courtesy of Northwest Medicine Impact Every Day. You know, Doc, I could be proven wrong, and like I said, I barely knew Prince, and when I did it was 20 years ago, but there was never, ever, 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 ever any indication of a drug or a booze problem, so I will be shocked if it turns out that way. And I know you're not in the business of speculation, so medically, what kills somebody at 57?
Yeah, you know, when we hear that and stay away from the drugs problem or drug potential issue. You know, we look at probably three main things, and one is the heart. And it's not that he had a heart attack. You know, we say, well, no, he's, you know, he's a pretty healthy guy here. He didn't have a heart attack. But he may have had what we call an arrhythmia, where the heart really stops beating and it just fibrillates. And that's why you see AEDs all around, the machines that defibrillate somebody. You shock that person back and their heart comes back in rhythm. So that's probably one of the
things. What causes that? I mean, is that something that maybe you have genetically?
Correct. You can have it genetically. Medications can cause it. Trauma can cause it. Blood flow can cause it. So there's lots of causes for it.
Can it be caused by being really sick?
Correct. Yep, absolutely.
So here's what we know. He had some sort of significant respiratory problem.
Yep.
He lands in the quads. He leaves the hospital before he's medically able to leave. And what's the process there? You have to sign yourself out because the doctors are telling you you're not ready to go, that kind of thing?
Correct. Yeah, you sign out a form called the AMA form against medical advice.
There you go. Yep. And so that's, and then he goes to work the next day and he does a show. Yep. So by all indications, he's not really taking care of himself. So that could, again, this is the speculation we're willing to do because that could medically lead to that. What about a PE?
Absolutely. You know, near and dear to your heart.
Yeah.
You know, pulmonary embolisms, a blood clot that goes to the lung is very common, but one of these where you see someone that dies at 57 who rides around in airplanes a lot and has, you know, a lot of times where they're seated for a long period of time, a very active guy like that. So a possibility of a pulmonary embolism would be right up there at the top of the list as well.
And then we hear about this all the time. Just out of the blue, somebody will have an aneurysm, right?
Correct. Yeah. Those would be the top three. And, you know, brain aneurysm, and again, this isn't a stroke. You know, strokes, again, are kind of like heart attacks in the brain. But a brain aneurysm is where the artery, the tubing that supplies blood to our brain, has a weak portion to it, and it kind of bubbles out and then bursts. And then you bleed into the brain. And unless you're at a hospital or we know that aneurysm is there, we can go in and clip it. That's almost always a death sentence. As soon as it occurs, there's really nothing that can be done without emergent neurosurgery.
Doc, when he landed in Moline, the reports were that he was being treated for the flu. So my question to you is, how would you treat the flu, and could the body react negatively to any of those treatments?
Yeah, you know, when we saw that in the influenza, and this year influenza has been kind of mild, but we have to remember influenza is a virus. So the medications that we would use to treat influenza are what we call antiviral medicines. Tamiflu is one that you probably have heard of. But we really only give that to people if we identify that they've had the flu for just less than 48 hours, because the medication really doesn't do anything except shorten the duration of the influenza. So for him, when we see that, and again, we use the term flu very generically, he may have had a stomach flu and been extremely dehydrated, which again could cause heart issues as well. But then the treatment would have been to give him IV fluids, give him some medication to stop him from vomiting if he was, and essentially fill up his tank, I'll say, to get him back where he wasn't dehydrated. So that's a possibility as well.
Now, you mentioned 57 and very healthy. However, physically, he wasn't the biggest guy in the world. Does a smaller person, and if this is a stupid question, I apologize, but a smaller framed individual have more threats from respiratory issues if they start?
No, not really. I mean, you have to remember that babies have lungs that are much smaller than princes are. So it really is.
Why not that much smaller?
Yeah, that's true. It's really not the size of the individual, but, you know, if he was having influenza, getting dehydrated, he has an electrolyte imbalance, which could definitely cause a heart arrhythmia. So you hope it's one of those natural causes.
Here's a weird aside. I remember a period of time where I believe, because he was always searching spiritually along with the music and all the other things, but there was a Jehovah's Witness period. And I don't understand that particular faith, so I don't want to speak about it like I do. But isn't there a portion of that faith about not taking medical treatment, you know, that type of thing? But then again, that can't be it, right? Because he agreed to go to a hospital. So,
correct. And Jehovah's Witness take medical treatment. They had just have some restrictions that they want to use on blood products and other products that are made from blood. But they will
see. That's why I'm glad Doc's on the phone, because he prevents me from putting my foot completely in my mouth.
You know, when you go to the doctor and when you ask, I know it's routine when they say, "Are you allergic to any medications?" And you say what you're allergic to, but you really don't know. unless you take it and have a reaction to
sure.
it, right?
Yeah, if you don't know and then you have, yeah, that's not a great way to find out. But it's always a bad idea if they tell you you need to stay in a hospital and you sign yourself out.
Yeah, it usually is. And, you know, some people say, hey, hospitals and doctors are very conservative, especially emergency room physicians, that they don't want to release somebody unless they're 100% sure. That's part of the business we're in. You know, our business is to protect people and to make sure that they're safe. And sometimes you're much more safe being observed in the hospital for 24 hours to make sure that arrhythmia doesn't come back, if that's what it was, to make sure that you can stay well hydrated, to make sure that we can check your electrolytes the next day to make sure that they're okay. So,
well, and sometimes I would assume you guys have to protect us from us.
Absolutely. You know, that happens, unfortunately, quite a bit. We always have, and you know what? That's probably one of the greatest techniques that emergency room physicians have, is the ability to explain to somebody the reason why they're doing what they're doing. People come into the emergency room often with preconceived notions of, hey, do this, 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 and I'm out of here. And yet when they find something, you need that very soft touch for the emergency room doctor to explain to somebody in a fairly short while why they need to do what they do need to do and why the individual needs to stay in the hospital.
Dr. Kevin Most, Northwestern Medicine, Impact Every Day. Thanks for the update. I appreciate it.
You got it, man. Talk to you soon. I never meant to call you when
you fall. Bears Super Bowl in Miami. It rained a lot. I never meant to call you when you came. Story goes they came to Prince and said, we might not be able to do this. Somebody could get hurt. You know, there's electricity involved. But he's a showman, right? He gets it. He gets the moment. You're going to sing Purple Rain. In the rain. All right, drive with your knees for just a second, but be careful. Come on, sway with me. Here you go. Talk to me, church. Let me hear it in the back row.
How many slow dances did you do to this song?
How many prom themes? I tweeted it out last night. There is a lot of genius packed into that little funky package. Eric Spitznagel has a website I recommend to you. It's Records Never Die. He's got more albums, more vinyl, more records, and more music knowledge than all of us combined. And good morning, Eric.
Good morning. I'm still swaying to the song. Did you keep it going?
You should. What a great, great, great. You know, I was really depressed. You know, I was really bummed out, depressed, you know, in a serious funk yesterday, but today I feel more like, you know, celebrate. You got to celebrate. The guy was unbelievable.
Yeah, exactly. And listen to the music. That's the most important thing. I was up all night listening to Purple Rain, Around the World in the Day. I mean, there's just, it's part of our DNA, some of these albums.
You know, it's funny, Eric, is I was at the premiere for Purple Rain.
Really?
And you watch that movie, and if you go back and watch it, I promise you it doesn't hold up. The music holds up. The music holds up. The story's ridiculous. The performances are terrible. The music and Apollonia coming out of the water after skinny dipping, that all holds up.
But it was the movie we all tried to sneak into when we were
tremendous.
13, 14 years old.
Just tremendous, tremendous.
But as a teenager watching that movie, it made me want to be like a tragic figure who had a difficult relationship with his father.
Right.
I mean, it was so affecting, you know, in the 80s. But yeah, you're probably right. Probably doesn't hold up.
Where do you put him? All time, where do you put him?
Oh, he's at the top or near the top. I mean, he's in terms of, I mean, it's hard to say because it's so personal for so many people.
Sure.
I mean, I came of age in the 80s and there is still, it wasn't just the music. It was the conversations. I mean, as a kid, I remember having these intense conversations about little red Corvette. Is that about a Corvette? And some older kids told us, like, no, it's a metaphor.
No, how about Darling Nikki? How about trying to explain that away?
Well, then later on, he had songs that were much more obvious.
Cream,
and others. Yeah. Yeah, Get Off with Two Fs.
What was the song Jack You Off about? I'm not really clear.
Yeah, it was his buddy Jack. Yeah, and they were leaving town. That was the thing. Now, here's the thing. He went through incarnations of bands, and he was not notoriously difficult to work with, but he was a genius. He knew what he knew, and he knew what he wanted, and communicating that sometimes would be tough. But I knew his original drummer, Bobby Z, and Bobby worked with him forever, and Bobby produces music now in Nashville. But yeah. Bobby Z and Lisa and Wendy and all of those in the original band, I always felt like he wanted to go back there. You know, like Springsteen kept going back. You know, and kept going back to the original. And I think if he could sit down with Prince, he'd go, yeah, just give me the old guys.
Yeah. The band, especially in the beginning, it was just the revolution was terrifying to me. I mean, the guy dressed as in Dr. Scrubs. I could never figure out why he was dressed in Dr. Scrubs, but I loved it.
Yeah. Well, that club, First Avenue in Minneapolis, Minneapolis has African-American athletes. And a population of about 50 or 60,000 African Americans in the city. So there was no giant black music culture. So to be able to develop that and then have the center of music end up in Minnesota, pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah, it really is. And anytime you go up there, I mean, I remember going up as a teenager and we just drove by the house like you might, you know, by Paisley Park, like you might drive by the castle if you went to London. Just it was royalty. It was just to be near it felt something electric about it.
Well, it's special. Sag, right? I mean, it's special. Like you said, it's deeply personal. Favorite Prince song of all time, Eric?
Yeah. My favorite Prince song?
Yeah.
Or favorite album?
Either one.
I go all over the place. I could never take the place of your man for some reason.
It's a good song.
It hit my sweet spot. Yeah, it really did. I played that incessantly.
Yeah, it's a good song.
That was the original binging for me. It was like back in those days, like finding that song and like, let me see if I can hear this a million times. And it becomes indistinguishable from my own memories.
So not Kiss, the Tom Jones version? No, not so much?
Not so much. No one could redo his songs and really have the same oomph to it. I mean, I love the Foo Fighters, but them covering Darling Nikki, it didn't feel as dirty to me.
Every bit of life, as you cover on Records Never Die, every milestone in your life has some kind of music tied to it. It became your life, and if you go to Records Never Die, you can follow what Eric does, and you can follow him on social media as well, at Eric with a C, Eric Spitznagel, spelled the traditional Spitznagel way. Go crazy. One time. Oh. 7:42, Greg Kot set to join us. Tell me when he's ready with. She apparently had asthma. At 7:42, Greg Kot standing by. Musical guru, our friend Greg Kot, and Lou Manfredini's neighbor, who Lou owes him money. at Greg Kot, wherever you follow him on social media. Good morning, sir.
How are you, Steve?
Nice to talk to you again. Well, you know, I mentioned this. I was bummed out and depressed yesterday, and today I just feel like just listening to his music and dancing like a fool.
Yeah, these last few months have been tough.
No kidding. What is with this year?
A lot of great ones. Bowie going was hard to take. That was a gut punch. And then Prince, too. I think there was a sense of, we're not capable of knowing these people. We don't travel in the same circles, but it did feel personal with Bowie and now with Prince because their music meant so much to not only myself, but people we knew. You know, it was a shared kind of love that you had, and these their music, you realize, carried you through so many decades. It felt like they were going to be around forever. And I was talking to my wife yesterday. She was out of town, and she couldn't believe it. She was just like almost speechless, which for my wife is pretty hard to do. You know, like, I don't have anything. I can't even speak. I don't even know how to deal with this. So it's it was a devastating news and so sudden. There was no like with Bowie, there was no indication that anything was wrong or that he was in ill health. The plane did pull over on Friday. Apparently, there was all this talk about he's suffering from the flu, and that seemed a little weird. That seemed a little off. Something's not quite right there. And then a few days later, he's dead. That's pretty stunning news.
Yeah, I mentioned this a couple of times. Regardless of what people have said on TMZ and various other places, and again, look, I was never in Prince's inner circle. I worked at a radio station he loved. We crossed paths a bunch of times in the early 90s and had a couple of very brief conversations, and he brought me up on stage once and pointed at me and laughed. You know, that's how deep the relationship was. But there was never any drug talk with him. There was never any drug talk, any booze talk, any of that. It was... It was always about the music. I'm not, and I could be proven wrong about this, but I think until it's medically clear that it wasn't a medical issue, you know, all this gossip and speculation doesn't help.
Yeah. There's a lot of speculation. There's supposed to be an autopsy now.
Right.
So hopefully we'll find out more.
One of the things that Prince is really great at is respecting the history, respecting the music. And he had so many great influences as well, along with the millions of people he influenced. But he loved the Staple Singers, didn't he?
He did. He, you know, he actually worked with Mavis Staples of the Staple Singers in the late 80s, early 90s. I mean, Mavis was, you know, was reduced to looking for jobs as a gospel DJ. I mean, she, you know, you know, the Staple Singers were no longer the, you know, the coin of the realm. The disco era kind of blew out their music, and Mavis was struggling. And, you know, Prince happened to hear her doing some backup vocals on a friend's record. Nona Hendrix had put out a record, and Mavis sang some backup vocals. And, you know, he's got a great ear, and he goes, who's that singing backup? And somebody said, found out it's Mavis Staples. So he went back and investigated Mavis's life. He'd heard about the Staple Singers, but he said he saw a movie in the early 70s, Soul to Soul, where they were performing in Ghana, and this performance by Mavis so moved him that he calls the house. You know, Pop Staples answers the phone. He only had Pop Staples' number, Mavis's dad,
right?
And said, hey, you know what, I want to work with your daughter. And, you know, Pops is like,
hello, it's Prince.
Who's this? And he goes, Prince, you know. And you know, he had to convince Mavis that Prince was really on the phone.
That's funny.
And, you know, Mavis went, Prince who? And Pops goes, the purple one.
Well, there is a documentary. Well, first off, you did the book, I'll Take You There.
Yeah.
Which is out, available everywhere. And as always, get two copies. You're careless, you'll lose the first one, by Greg Kot, KOT. And the documentary I love, and I haven't had a chance to tell you that. I think I may have shot you a text or something. But the documentary that's been running on, and you know, I was up all night watching the Hawks. HBO or Showtime?
HBO, I think. Yeah,
HBO. Running all the time on HBO. Get it, see it. And she talks about that Prince experience, but was there some sort of, the album never came out, right, that they did? What was the story there?
Well, there were two albums that they did together, you know, and he took her on tour. And
yeah.
I saw
him at Paisley, and I saw him here.
Yeah, he did right by her, and at the same time, he was having all those problems with Warner Brothers, his label. Remember, those were the days where he changed his name, yep, to that unpronounceable symbol,
right,
and wrote Slave on his face. Well, the record deal kind of fell through, and as a result, Mavis's record kind of got lost in the shuffle, but she made a really great record. The first one's okay. The second one's really good, The Voice. And that's the one that got lost in the shuffle. And when Prince's contract imploded, Mavis's career as well with the label imploded. And that was kind of the sad outcome of that. But in terms of the music, you know, they actually worked together pretty seriously for 3 or 4 years there. And Prince understood her, brought her on tour. He did, as you said, I think what you said, Steve, was very astute in that he was very much, you know, felt part of a tradition. Like, I'm not something brand new. I love Larry Graham of Sly Stone's, you know, the great bassist.
Right.
He brought him on tour with him. I love, you know, these great players that were in James Brown's band and brought them on tour with him.
Well, I can tell you, Greg, I was at Paisley Park one night, and out of one door is Miles Davis, and out of another door is Chaka Khan, who, yeah, previously was just Rufus and Chaka. And then I sit down on a couch and I talk to Miss Mavis Staples for a half an hour like I was some 12-year-old. Giddy is a schoolgirl. I mean, it'll just, he had always had these great legendary figures around Paisley Park back then.
Yep, I met Larry Graham there one day, you know, this great bass player for Sly, and you know, it was just like, these are my friends, and he was learning from them. He was very willing to you know, take instruction from them. You thought Prince was this self-contained guy who knew everything, you know, was kind of cocky. But no, in fact, he looked upon these people as mentors and father and mother figures in his life. I mean, he called Mavis, he said, when I met Mavis, I felt like I was meeting my mom again.
Yeah, how about that?
Like this person that was such a huge influence on me before I met her, and then I felt like I'd known her all my life when I finally did meet her. So, you know, he was very respectful of the legacy, and I think he felt part of a long tradition that goes back to people like Duke Ellington and stuff, and people go, Duke Ellington. I got to tell you, when I was watching Prince work his band in preparation for this last major tour he did back in 2012. He was working with like a 20-piece band up there, horns, the whole nine yards, and he was playing the instruments. I mean, you know, he was like the band leader, calling out the solos, you know, saying, need a little bit more mute on the bass. You know, give me some...
yeah, how about that?
...staccato on the horns. I mean, he was hearing every instrument. He was this... You know, and I asked him, what's your favorite instrument? He said, my favorite instrument is the band. He was a great...
How cool band. Is that?
You know, yeah. I mean, the guy heard music in a way that was really extraordinary. You felt like you were in the presence of somebody who was, you know, you don't use this word lightly. I mean, a genius. He really felt that way, you know, meeting a guy like that with his musical acumen. And the fact that he could pick up any one of 27, 30 instruments and make music on it. I mean, it was really pretty extraordinary. He played most of the instruments on his records, but when he went on tour, he said, I am not going to play to a backing track. I want to hear every sound.
Right.
So that's why he'd bring those big bands with him on the road.
Well, and he did something cool with us when I was on this radio station, KDWB in Minneapolis. He listened to the station, and he would call the guy that ran the station, who's a big shot at Viacom now. He runs CMT, among other things, brilliant guy named Brian Phillips. And Brian was the program director. And he'd call Brian, and he'd say, I got a track I want to hear on the radio. He goes, put it on in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
You know, because he respected the real estate. He wasn't going to tell you to just throw it on because I'm Prince. So at 2 or 3 in the morning, you'd play this track from Prince. And the reason he wanted to hear it on the radio, because he wanted to hear it the way listeners would hear it, the way people would hear it. He wanted to hear it with the compression of the radio, so then he'd make adjustments back in the studio.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because it was personal to him. And then he would call the show. He'd call the hotline. There was a guy that worked for him named Billy Sparks.
Mm-hmm.
And I can remember Alexander O'Neill had a couple of hits. There was a song called Fake.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So he'd call up and he'd go, it's Billy. It's Billy. The man wants to hear Fake. Play Fake for the man. So Prince is up at 7 o'clock in the morning listening because he slept like a bat hanging upside down somewhere in Paisley Park for like 2 hours a night. And he was always working in 4 or 5 different studios.
Yeah. Yeah. He was,
nuts.
Was a workaholic.
So anyway, Greg, you know what a fan I am of your work, and I love, love, love what you've done with Mavis, and she must have become a friend through all of that.
Well, you know, she's one of the few musicians, artists I can say that truly has, you know, gives two figs about anything that I do. You know, mostly it's a one-way conversation. You're asking about their lives. You know, she probably knows as much about me because she's such a, you know,
good person.
A loving person, and. My kids love her. You know, she names them. She knows my kids' name. You know, it's like, how's Katie doing? How's Marissa? You know, it's like that kind of a relationship. It's like, wow, I couldn't be more blessed to have known this person in my life. That's the way I feel.
We need to have Mavis in studio next time.
Anytime. Anytime, Mavis. I do love Mavis. So on the phone, by fax.
Yeah.
Mavis Staples featured in I'll Take You There. Great, some just great TV on HBO and the book. Get the book. Get 3 copies, as a matter of fact, from Greg Kot, and tell Lou to pay you.
Yeah, I will. I'm actually seeing him later today, so I'll get on him.
All right, buddy. Thank you.
All right, thanks, Steve. Appreciate
Traffic,
it.
And then we'll come back. Well, let's play a little I'll Take You There when we come back.
Mercy, I'll take you there.
Yeah.
Oh, let me take you there.
I'll take you there.
Oh,
come on. You ever try to sing a Staples song? You try to sing a Mavis song? You'll never sound whiter.
I was just thinking that as we were kind of dancing to it.
She sings scats. She scat sings. You know what I mean? She does things with words that nobody else could do, and I don't know if she could teach it.
All right, now, baby, little lady, easy here, help me out, come on, little lady.
You ever see like documentaries on, you know, music where you hear artists or acting or whatever, and they start talking technically about, you know, you have to get inside the song? Well, listen to this. That's what she's doing. Prince got it, brought Mavis back. They had great times together, regardless of what Warner Brothers did or didn't release.
Celebrating the music of Prince and all of Prince's friends, as we'll continue next hour. Dean will join us in a bit.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood. You know I love you more than what I should. Kiss me,
8:12 in the morning. Remembering the music of Prince throughout the morning, and much more to play. A couple more stories to tell too. One of the times I saw him at Paisley, he was actually sporting the yellow buttless outfit that he wore for a couple of shows. And by the way, that would Dean, that was a terrible look for me.
Yes. Yes, that's not you and I both. You know, it's not easy to get the buttless fashions in husky boy sizes.
You know, I think I mentioned this on the air before, but he had two full-time seamstresses or seamstressers who made his clothes, and in making his clothes, there was this upstairs like wardrobe thing that you could go by, but the mannequins were they were tiny. They were like disturbingly tiny, where you would hang the clothes as they were being made.
Wasn't he also on the tiny side? Wasn't he like 5'2"?
He was tiny. Oh, yeah, no. 5'2 on a good day.
Yeah.
Yeah, heels. Funny dude, though.
Everybody says that if he had chosen to go into comedy, he would have been a huge success.
I don't know that his stand-up act would have been much because he didn't use a lot of words, but he was good at needling people. So... the music, though, unbelievable. Unbelievable. Did you ever get a chance to see a show live?
I did. I saw his last show that he did here in Chicago, actually, at the United Center. It was September 2012, and he did three shows here. As we learned later, he did them as kind of a benefit for youth groups that were affected by gun violence in Chicago. He was very quiet about excuse me, the charitable work.
Yeah, he gave away a lot of money.
That he did. Gave away lots of money. Most recently was very concerned about the problem of gun violence. Gun violence here in Chicago. In Baltimore, if you remember, one of the last songs that he released was a song that was, I believe it was called Baltimore, about the shootings that took place there, did benefits there. He was very, very involved. It was very interesting on CNN last night. Van Jones, who's normally a political commentator on CNN, was very, very close friends with Prince. And he talked about a side of Prince that you just didn't hear about very often. And we have a little bit of the audio of Van Jones remembering Prince.
Now people will start talking and you'll start hearing. You know, he was such a private person that people in the inner circle, nobody got on TV and said anything. In fact, if you got on TV bragging about you know Prince, you ain't going to know Prince tomorrow because he doesn't like that. So now you're going to hear all these people coming out. Oh, he mentored me. He helped me. Like I said, he was there for us when we were down. Mm. When I left the White House, he was the first person to call. Al Gore called me and he called me. Use music to express itself, but he also was an incredible humanitarian. He was a Jehovah's Witness, so he was not allowed to speak publicly about any of his good acts, any of his charitable activity.
So when Van Jones stopped working at the White House, as he'd mentioned, Prince was one of the first people to step up to help him. But if you were to look at the things that Van Jones is involved in now, a number of them are charitable organizations. Mm-hmm. And as Jones said last night, these weren't organizations that I started. These are organizations that Prince started and said, you put your name on them. I don't want to be the one, you know, I don't want the attention for this. I just want these things to happen. He put all the money into these things and told Van Jones, you run these operations and I will fund them.
Well, I remember, again, going back to the Minneapolis days at KDWB, we got word of a charitable show he was doing, and I don't remember the cause, but I jumped on the air. And we had a really good relationship with Paisley and with Prince, and I jumped on the air and mentioned it. And we got this clandestine phone call like an hour before I got off the air. And I got off the air, and the promotions director at the time, they got Paul Williams, who was in here a couple weeks ago. He's still involved with country music. He goes, I got to talk to you. He goes, I just got a call from Paisley. They're really, really mad. And the whole point was I was trying to give Prince credit for doing something nice, but he didn't want to talk about it. He just wanted the work to be done.
Yeah, he did not. Part of it was As I'm told that he was a Jehovah's Witness, and if you are Jehovah's Witness, you're not supposed to take credit, you're not supposed to brag, you're not supposed to, you know, you're supposed to do good deeds, you're not supposed to talk about that you're doing good deeds. So, you know, part of it was that, but I, as Van Jones was very emotional. I mean, he is usually so stoic and so articulate.
Right?
He lost a close friend last night and was extremely emotional a couple of times last night, as anybody I think would be. But, you know, he talked about this side of Prince that, you know, we know the songs, the hits. At the concert, at the United Center concert, and at concerts all over the world, really, in recent years, Prince, you know, would famously say, I have too many hits. I have too many hits. You know, I'm trying to do all my hits for you. I have too many hits. And, you know, when you go to one of his shows, really, the discography is amazing.
Well, you would walk out, and Springsteen's the same way, and a lot are. Well, I shouldn't say a lot. There's three or four like this. But they have so much to choose from. That you can play for 2 hours, you can play for 2.5 hours, and you're going to get in the car and you're going to drive home and go, oh, I wish he would have played that.
Right.
You know,
right. There'd be one that you wanted to hear that was a huge legitimate hit that you know they might not get to. But, you know, think about his accomplishments. Got a record contract when he was still a teenager. Wasn't the greatest recording contract deal in the world, something that would come back to bite him later on, which would play a significant role in really kind of his identity, but had a major recording contract when he was a teenager, would go on to sell 100 million records. That's one of the biggest recording artists of all time. 7 Grammy Awards, an Oscar, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Well, and I would argue, too, he never had the cash out phase. He never put out the album where, you know, and a lot of artists do, because he was not great with money. He was not a good businessman. And as a friend of mine told me yesterday, he's a big shot in the music business. He goes, artists should never start their own labels. It's proven time and time again. And he tried to do that, and he lost a bunch of money. He wasn't a businessman. He was an artist. But he was the type of person who was able to tee it up and go back out. And he should have been in comfortable phase now. He should have been going out now making literally $2 million a show and just flying around in his jet and having a good time. And you know what I really feel cheated about, Dean? I feel cheated about the fact that we never got to see 75-year-old blues man Prince sitting on a stool just ripping it, just playing the old stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, well, maybe the great die young, too. I got to ask you about the health thing, too. Stand by one second.
Yeah, sure.
I got to ask you about the health piece of this, too, because that's the TMZ angle that's aggravating to me this morning. Even though they may be proven right, I think the speculation that he was a drug user is ridiculous until it's proven to be true. It's 8:19. We're back after this.
You can travel Chicago. You'll be calling his name. Oh, 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 oh. Dean Richards, the entertainment editor.
8:23 now. We return with Dean Richards from Channel 9. Sponsored by the Captain James A. Lovell Federal Healthcare Center. I had to cut you off to do traffic. What were you saying before the break?
I don't remember, but I think the health issue.
You know,
what happens next really is, you know, we celebrate his life, we celebrate his music, but there is a little bit of a mystery as to what happened here. What happened a week ago when he was on a private plane returning home from a concert, made that emergency landing at Quad Cities International Airport last Friday, as a matter of fact. Was taken to a hospital in Moline and was treated. That's all that we knew. Officials had said that he was
dehydrated,
that he had the flu, and that he was dehydrated. But also, he was 40 minutes from home. I mean, if you have the flu, I'm not a doctor. If he had the flu, could he have made it to his own doctor, to his own hospital, to his own home in the Minneapolis area instead of stopping in Moline? Why Moline? Why not Chicago?
Well, somebody must have felt like he was in really rough shape,
right?
And then to leave the hospital early and sign himself out seems to be a real mitigating factor.
I think that's what a lot of people are wondering. Why all of that? So, you know, people wonder what was his health like. We had a former band member, a gentleman named Dr. Fink, who played on the Purple Rain a song. It was in the Purple Rain movie. He was a member of Prince's band for a number of years, and he was on telling stories about Prince. But among the things he told us is that Prince had a heart murmur. I never knew that.
I didn't either.
We also learned when we found a clip yesterday from a Tavis Smiley show from 2014 where he talked about being epileptic. And we have that clip as well.
Roll it.
I haven't spoken about this before, but I was born epileptic. And I used to have seizures when I was young. And my mother and father didn't know what to do or how to handle it, but they did the best they could with what little they had. And my mother told me one day I walked into her and said, Mom, I'm not going to be sick anymore. And she said, why? And I said, because an angel told me so. Now, I don't remember saying it. That's just what she told me.
So, you know, is the fact that he was epileptic, did that have something to do with, and you know, that we must land the plane right now? Don't know. You know, these are just things that, you know, we're all wondering about.
Yeah, and it's fair to wonder. I just, you know, and again, it's I don't have any right to make it personal. I can just tell you anecdotally 20 years ago, and everybody I spoke to yesterday who stayed in touch with him said no drugs. There was never any history of drugs. In a world at the top of rock and roll where you're surrounded by drugs and alcohol and every temptation, he just wasn't a part of that world. Now, he could have, but Dean, I don't know that many people at 50 that start using or at 55. No, he could well have been in a problem, but I'll be shocked. I'll be shocked if it turns out to be it.
Well, here's what a scenario you know, might be. Because last night, TMZ, who, by the way, were among the first to report his death,
right,
was the first to report Michael Jackson's death, was the first to report problems with Whitney Houston. TMZ, I mean, they take, you know, they take a rap for being a sleazy tabloid website, but they have been turning very credible news as well. But it's a website. They posted something last night. That said, from multiple sources, not one person, multiple sources, that Prince was treated for a drug overdose when he went to that hospital in Moline. What they say is that when he landed, he was rushed to the hospital there and was given a save shot. And I'm told that that's something which is administered to counter the effects of an opiate. So,
like Narco or something like that that they give for heroin. It
could be for a variety of reasons that
Narcon was
somebody,
it's Narco.
That somebody takes an opiate.
Can't be Narco. That's the wrong term. But it's a drug that we've been talking about a lot lately in the western suburbs that cops carry it around.
Yeah, so
Narcan.
You know, Narcan, that's it.
Yeah, the sources tell TMZ that doctors there advised Prince to stay in the hospital. He did not. He was released 3 hours after arriving and flew home. They also have a photograph, which probably is the last photograph that was ever taken of Prince, outside of a Walgreens store in Minneapolis that sources say he visited four times in the last few days before he died. Why all of that? I don't know.
Yeah, we don't know. That's just it.
It's all extremely circumstantial.
It could lead to something, or it could be that he overdosed on over-the-counter stuff trying to get over his flu. I mean, who knows?
Entirely possible. And, you know, not saying any of this to disparage
him in
any way. It's just putting out all the theories that are out there right now. The autopsy is going to be done today. Autopsy results could be available in a few days. Toxicology reports could be available in a few weeks. That's when we'll know definitively what happened. It's just that the emergency landing in Moline is a mystery. You know, when you're so close to some of the best hospitals in the world in Chicago, why you choose we must land now in Moline? Nothing against Moline, but it's just curious of why you wouldn't go to Chicago, or if you have the flu. Why you couldn't go for 40 more minutes to get
he must have been very, very ill on the plane.
Something was going on the plane where they felt like we must land right this second.
And we live in a world of speculation, but it's fair circumstantial evidence to bring up as part of furthering the story until we have the answers. And the next thing you'll be hearing about is, you know, the will and his estate and things of that nature. Knowing he was not a good businessman, I'd be curious to find out eventually how much money he did have left.
It's going to be very interesting because not only strictly monetarily.
But
there are rumors also that there are vaults and vaults and vaults of songs that have never been released, which now become extra valuable. Who gets it? He was married twice. His last wife passed away. The child that he had died when he was an infant. There are no heirs. I don't know if there are other family members.
He's got a sister, but I'm not sure what the deal is with the sister.
He has six half sisters
and
brothers.
And he's got a full sister that's in Minneapolis still, I think. But here's the thing about the vault, this mystery vault, because I saw the vault because this is pre-digital. So there's this door, this mysterious door at Paisley Park.
Probably with actual gigantic reels of tapes, right?
Big tapes behind it, exactly right. So that is so valuable because it's all unreleased Prince recordings. Some of them are just riffs. Some of them are fully produced songs, all sorts of stuff. So, yeah, a lot to unravel. All right, I know you got to get back to work, but we'll hear you on the radio Sunday?
Yep, we'll have a lot more then.
All right, thanks, man. It's 8:31. We're back with a big story next on 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Dahmer sitting in from the left corner. Tried to spin it in behind the net and did. Ponick's got it there. Rolling around. Fed the high slot. King. Now he deeks. He moves toward the net and shoots. Oh, it rolls just by the net. Rebound. Score! Patrick Kane with a wraparound goal in overtime. His first goal in the playoffs. Woo-hoo! And the Hawks beat the Blues in double overtime. 4-3. And this series is going back to the United Center for Game 6 on Saturday. Hawks win in double overtime down here in St. Louis.
How good is that? The Chicago Blackhawks in their continuing effort to kill me with stress went in double overtime last night and force a Game 6 at Muzz 19, M-U-Z-Z 19. It's a great Troy Murray, Blackhawks legend, and my new favorite woohoo man.
Woo-hoo. I got a little excited. Great. Come on.
That was so great. You know what your buddy sounds like? We got a little Weidemann. Hold on, listen to this. Give me a little Weidemann and Troy. Your choice, whichever one you want to hit first.
First goal of the playoffs!
Okay, that's you. Do we have a Weidemann ha-ha?
Ha-ha!
I can listen to 3 hours of ha-ha and woo-hoo.
Ha-ha!
So good. So good. You know, the key goal to me last night, obviously the winner, but the key goal to me last night was the Kane to Panarin with half a second left. You don't get that. It ends in regulation. And that was as good a bang-bang as we've seen the whole series.
Playoffs!
You guys are brutal.
But at that goal at the end of the second, that you had to have that.
Yeah, that was it. There was another goal like that the Blackhawks scored right at the tail end with a few seconds to go.
Oh, Keith's Friday night, yeah.
And it was Andy Shaw's goal that ended up there. He was in front of that when Duncan Keith scored, I think it was. But that's a big goal. And, you know, I just look at this team's resolve and the way that it just competes. And it wasn't pretty. And St. Louis, obviously, you have to give them a lot of credit because they're a good hockey team, coming back and scoring two goals and really putting the Blackhawks in a position where they didn't want to be as one bounce goes the wrong way and they're done for the year. But they just find ways to win hockey games at the right moments. And it's more often than not one of their star players that stepped up. Patrick Kane had been quiet for, you know, the majority of the night. That was a great setup for him to Panarin with the 0.4 on the clock and give them a little bit of breathing room. But finding ways to win these hockey games is something the Blackhawks have been able to do in winning their three Stanley Cups, and it's something that they're going to have to continue to do because I don't see this series separating from what we've been watching here in the first five games, one goal efforts one way or the other.
You know, Dave and I were talking earlier, the difference in last night, because the Blues were pretty great in most of the first two periods. Mm-hmm. They were great coming out in the first overtime. And but the difference is things started to go our way first time in this series where you really felt like things started to go our way. The end of the second period, pucks bouncing in the right spot, the rebound that kicks out in the double overtime so you can stuff it for the win. That's what drives people crazy. And now you're the Blues. You got to come back to the madhouse, and you got to win game six. That's a lot of pressure.
You've actually put yourself in a pretty decent spot. You don't want to be behind, but to put the back basically on serve of winning home games and forcing a game seven where everybody knows anything can happen, that's where you stand right now. St. Louis didn't want to come back to Chicago, that's for sure. They're saying all the right things, and they should, because they still believe that they can beat the Blackhawks, and they've been great in this series. But for the Blackhawks to, you know, force this opportunity for St. Louis to kind of show what they're all about in Game 6, if they lose that game, there's going to be a ton of pressure on the Blues going into Game 7 because they can't get it done, and kind of history has shown them that they haven't been able to close out these series. They know, Ken Hitchcock, the St. Louis Blues head coach, knows that the Blackhawks are a tough out. And if you're going to beat the, you know, defending Stanley Cup champs, you're going to have to do it. It's not going to come easy, and they're not going to go out quietly. So I expect it's going to be a heck of a hockey game tomorrow night at the United Center at 7 o'clock.
Yeah, at the right time.
A more reasonable time. Hey, Troy, in my mind, one of the key moments of this game, along with the Panarin goal at the end of the second, obviously along with Kane's goal, was the penalty kill by the Blackhawks late in the third period. Because now they've come back, they've got all the momentum, now they get a power play with, what, about 4 minutes to go, and the Blackhawks are able to kill that off and get it to OT.
If you saw what Nicholas Jalmerson was doing on that penalty kill, it was incredible. This kid named Colton Parayko has got an absolute cannon from the point, and Nicholas Jalmerson was willing to stand in there, and I think he had two blocks on that series. They knew what they had to do. It was do or die. If St. Louis scores there, you're done for the season. And unfortunately for the Blackhawks, too many times this year they've been guilty for that penalty, and they had six guys on the ice, and all six guys. This wasn't a line change, Stephen Day. This was six guys on the ice playing, having some fun out there. So you can't make those mistakes at that point of a hockey game, but a huge penalty kill, obviously, and Corey Crawford coming up with the big saves at the right time, and everybody sacrificing themselves to get the job done.
You know, a name we haven't mentioned because he didn't play last night, but his presence certainly has been felt, and that's Andrew Shaw. And now they get him back tomorrow night. How much does that help as they come home, that they're able to win this game without him? They still were able to get guys to the net, and now they get Shaw back.
There probably wasn't a guy more involved in watching that game than Andrew Shaw, because he was devastated for what happened, and he felt really bad that he wasn't able to be out on the ice and help his team in that elimination situation. He is going to be so excited to get back in the lineup, and I know that the players know that Andrew Shaw understands what happened in that situation, and he's going to come back out, and he's going to play one of his best games ever in my mind, because he's just that type of guy that's going to come out there and appreciate the fact that he gets another opportunity to be playing in this series.
The game six starting time for pregame is 6:30, Dave? Is that right?
Yeah, we'll have the beat. We'll be out there starting at 3. In fact, we might even just start now.
Why not?
Yeah.
I'll meet you guys over there right now.
That would be good for both of us. Yeah, be good image. Be good for all of our images. But the Blues have the Blues do not want to have to go home and have to try to win Game 7 after dropping 5 and 6. As the great philosopher Jim Carrey in Dumb and Dumber said, "So you're saying there's a chance."
I'm excited, and for St. Louis, they're a good hockey team. This has been a really good series. But if you talk to the guys who are, you know, around following this series, they're saying, and you know, it is, and there's great hockey all across the NHL right now in the playoffs. But if this was a Stanley Cup final and the play and the level of where it was at right now, nobody would have an issue of this being the final series, because the two teams are so even and the games have been tremendous. Unfortunately, one of these teams is going to go home, and it's going to be a lot of disappointment one way or the other. And the St. Louis Blues, you know, they're trying to get to that next step, get over the hump of what they haven't been able to accomplish
in the postseason, and the Blackhawks are just the heart of a champion right now. And I really look forward to that game tomorrow, and I know they're not going to be too thrilled that they've lost the first two games here in the playoffs on home ice, so they're going to be ready to go, and I know the fans at the United Center are going to be excited.
I'll be taking a very long nap today.
So will I.
Yeah, getting prepped for tomorrow. Thank you, buddy. All the best.
Thanks for having me on.
See you, but Troy Murray at Muzz 19, M-U-Z-Z 19.
Isn't it amazing? 5 one-goal games. The scoring differential in this series is 1 goal.
It's nuts.
St. Louis 13, the Blackhawks 12.
It's nuts. Totally nuts.
And that's our moniker. One goal.
Yeah. Yeah. My prediction tomorrow night, Hawks 47, Blues 2.
I think that would kind of go against the grain of the way this series has gone so far, but I'll take it.
Honey, Steve Cochran Show, all-time Prince Top 10. This is number 4. Remember this? Shake it. Little delirious. Delirious. Never you need. Lose all self-control, baby, just get still. Whiskey locked in place. Stupid look on my face. It comes to making a pass, pretty mama. You don't hear this very often, but if you like that moment at a wedding where a bunch of white people get up and dance awkwardly, this is always a winner. Missing Prince, day after he passes away at 57, cause to be determined. Steve Cochran Show continues. You know it's time for the Express?
I do, but before that, the Midwest Medical Examiner's Office is just sent out a statement saying that they will begin an autopsy on Prince's body this morning, this hour. Okay. So that autopsy is going to begin today.
All right. And the Express is sponsored by our normal friends, right? Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing. You know, when they win, we like to make a federal case of it.
Chicago Blackhawks have to play their best game of the season tonight. As hard, intense, and mistake-free as ever. Coming to the blue line, Hossa right circle. Shoot, he scores! Marian Hossa with his first goal of the playoffs off of a 2-on-1 shorthanded rush. He beats Elliott cleanly. And the Hawks take a 1-0 lead down here in St. Louis in Game 5. Here's Panarin around to the left circle. Got some room. Fires! Oh, and there's a save. There is. He scores! Elliott plopped on the puck, and it rolled past him. I believe Anisimov got a piece of that and knocked it over the Blues' goal line. And the Hawks forge ahead at 2-1. It was Anisimov who stopped it actually with his skate on the goal line. And then with his stick, chipped it into the net. 2-1 Hawks. Shot from Panarin. He scores! With no time on the clock, and the green light comes on in behind the Blues net. Let's see if this is going to count.
Well, they're going to review this one. Let's take a quick look at this. It's in the net.
That's
it's going to be a goal.
Petrangelo shoots and scores. This ties the game. The puck was redirected in the slot. Petrangelo fired it toward the net, and David Backes redirected it past Crawford. With 5:10 left in the third period, we're tied at 3. Chalmers sitting in from the left corner. Tried to spin it in behind the net and did. Panik's got it there. Rolling around. From the high slot. King. Now he deeks. He moves toward the net and shoots. Oh, it rolls just left of the net. Rebound. Score! Patrick Kane with a wraparound goal in overtime. His first goal of the playoffs. And the Hawks beat the Blues in double overtime. 4-3. And this series is going back to the United Center for Game 6 on Saturday. Hawks win in double overtime down here in St. Louis.
Got a woo-hoo and a ha-ha there.
Ha-ha there from Troy.
How about that? Sponsored by Wintrust Community Banks. Thank you for that as the 8 o'clock hour wraps up. We're going to introduce you to a very, very cool athlete here in a few minutes. Talk a little more Prince and my friend Mark DiCarlo all coming up in the 9 o'clock hour on the Steve Cochran Show.
Ha-ha! First goal of the playoffs!
Prince. You have to just bear with me unless you get your own show, because I could listen to it all day. 9:13 now.
Steve That's Cochran a song.
Show continues.
You have to watch high school kids at that with that song at a dance. It's trouble with that song. Yeah.
That's probably where grinding started.
Oh, yeah.
Paralympian in Chicago, and Haley, you know, Haley, instead of screwing up your last name, just pronounce it for me, please.
Haley Danisevich.
Danisevich. How are you, Danisevich?
Yeah. I'm good. How are you?
I'm great, and I appreciate you jumping on because we wanted to make sure we had an opportunity to help you big mouth this, this item a little bit. Walk with Haley at the American Cancer Society Walk and Roll in Chicago. When is it?
It's this Saturday, tomorrow.
Tomorrow morning?
Yep.
And walkrollchicago.org, that's the website?
That's correct, yes.
All right, and just sell it a little bit. Why do people need to come out?
Well, I mean, it's going to be a really just a great opportunity to just raise some funds for an incredible organization that helps out with all different types of cancer, and just a way to get outside on a beautiful day and be active. Is also a great opportunity for cancer survivors and caretakers to come together and network with one another, and just, you know, share experiences.
And you yourself are a cancer survivor.
I am, yes.
We'll talk about your experience.
Sure. I was diagnosed with bone cancer in my leg when I was 12. Went through a year of chemotherapy and several surgeries, which eventually led to the amputation of my leg when I was 14. And so, you know, it's something that I have, you know, it's been a part of my life for about 12 years. And, you know, through it, I have been able to meet all sorts of amazing people and have a lot of really great experiences.
I love your attitude. How come you're not bitter?
You know, I think because it has led me to so many wonderful things. And, you know, it certainly did change the trajectory of my life. But I think that it ended up bringing about so many positive things that it's kind of hard to be bitter.
You were right. But to give yourself credit, a lot of people in your position would be. And you not only are bitter, you've met all these other people and you've turned it in to one of the great para-athlete careers. And I know you're in the middle of training now, so we'll ask you about that in a second. Say hi, Andre.
Hi, Haley. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
Good. Hey, talk about, you know, I know I've seen you cross the finish line at the Chicago Marathon. One of the first times you ran was with your doctor, was it not? And you guys forged this friendship and ran it together.
We did, yeah. That was my very first marathon in Chicago. I told my doctor that I was planning on doing this marathon, and she was a big marathoner herself, and I think was kind of at the point in her running career where she wanted to run for something more than just herself. And so she graciously offered to run that race with me. We ended up having the best time. To this day, it's probably one of my favorite races I've ever done. It was just very cool to be able to share that experience together.
It's so inspirational. The last time I think I saw you cross the finish line at the marathon, there was a little girl who came up to you and a fan, and they gave you flowers or just gave you a hug or something, and someone said, oh yeah, she follows you you know, online. It's one of your youngest fans.
Yeah. you know, to me, that is kind of a funny thing to wrap my mind around, like to think that I actually have fans, because I still don't really see myself as like being that big of a deal. But, you know, I think for me, one of the coolest things is just, you know, I'm out there doing what I love. Like, running and triathlons are my passion and I absolutely love it. And I think it's kind of cool that, you know, by me doing the thing that I love, it is able to motivate other people. So.
Well, and again, I don't want to keep patting you on the back here, Haley, but clearly you won't do it for yourself. So I'm going to have to be the one. If you go to social media, you can follow Haley all the time at Hailstorm USA. How great is that handle, by the way, at Hailstorm USA. And Haley Danisevich is a guest. Dave Annett, say hi.
Good morning, Haley.
Good morning.
When you talk to other cancer survivors and obviously, you're an inspiration to them. What do you get from them in return?
Oh, gosh. You know, I think just being able to share those common experiences is so important and very humbling for me, too. You know, to be able to speak with someone who might be currently going through cancer treatment it's just, it's a very humbling reminder for me to, you know, remember all the things that I had gone through. And, you know, I guess it just makes me that much grateful to be where I am today. And I'm always able to draw inspiration from, you know, from other cancer survivors just by sharing our common experiences.
Haley Danishevitz, training for the next Para Olympic Games. All right, so what's your training regimen?
Well, so I'm training for, yeah, the Para Triathlon in Rio this September. So right now I'm pretty much training 7 days a week in swim, bike run, and strength training. You know, typically 2 to 3 workouts a day. With a lot of rest and recovery in between, just really doing my best to, you know, take care of my body, keep it injury free, and get to the start line in Rio faster and stronger than I've ever been.
And what do you do in the 6 minutes a day that you're not training?
Oh gosh. You know, my life is really boring outside of triathlon. You know, I like to read, I like to drink coffee, spend time with friends. But really, like, most of my focus is just on, and if it's not on the actual training, it's on, you know, recovering from training, meal preparation. You know, most of the things that I do kind of are with this goal of Rio in mind.
Again, at a Hailstorm USA, before I let you go, I'm always inspired by the people that inspire inspiring people. Try to follow that sentence. And and when you have something like this happen to you at 12, 13, 14 years old, I don't know if it was family members, a mom, dad, aunts, uncles, whoever, who kept you between the white lines?
Yeah, I think it was a combination of all of that. You know, I had a really great support system at home, you know, from my family to my friends at school, the hospital staff, the friends, other patients that I met in the hospital. You know, they all were so supportive and, you know, really made it easy for me to just, you know, stay positive throughout the entire experience.
You know, what's really cool about Haley, and you guys can disagree, but she's an amazing young woman who's special and doesn't think she is.
I don't disagree.
And I think that's one of one of the things that makes you great. So we couldn't be pulling for you harder. Once again, let's plug what's happening tomorrow. Where do people go?
All right. Soldier Field tomorrow morning. It's going to be a great time, and I can't wait to see you guys there.
WalkRollChicago.org. Thank you for doing it.
Great. Thank you so much.
All right. Appreciate you being on. Hold on. Give her a pizza or something. Oh, that's right. She's training.
Okay. How hard is it to do a triathlon or a marathon, period?
With two legs?
Let alone the challenges that she's been through? She's awesome. It is really cute, though. This little girl follows her on Twitter and meets her at the finish line of all of her races.
It's tremendous.
So cute.
Yeah, and like she said, what have I got fans for? She is hard not to like, I'll tell you that for sure. I seem to have done what I do best. I seem to have misplaced the prize sheet. What would you like to give our friend Haley? And by the way, she didn't ask for anything, but we're going to give her something for being on the show just because we want to. And that would be tickets to see The King and I. A pair of tickets to see Rodgers and Hammerstein's Broadway musical, The King and I, playing at the Lyric April 29th through May 22nd, featuring well-known tunes like Something Wonderful and Getting to Know You at lyricopera.org. And just tell her when you give her the tickets, if she wants to just go for like one song and leave because she's got to sleep and train, that's totally fine. We're not going to be offended. Lyricopera.org. 922, Steve Cochran Show continues next, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on 720 WGN. Might not be on your top 10. I was trying to think of a Prince song yesterday I don't like. I mentioned this to Greg Cott earlier, but a buddy of mine brought this up to me yesterday. We were talking about the Minneapolis days. I'm still, you know, the attention to detail, the fact that he would call the radio station, you know, where I was doing a morning show, and we play this wacky track at like 2 or 3 in the morning because he just wanted to hear what it sounded like on the radio so he could tweak it in the studio to get it right for when people would hear it on the radio down the road. James Van Osdell knows. I see him at all the disc jockey meetings. How you doing, man?
Good, thanks. Good morning.
Nice to see you. Q101, XRT, The Loop, The Mix, maybe?
For like a cup of coffee. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, get in line, dude. I'm king of the cup of coffee. But this is, you know, you're not that much younger than me. You get Prince.
Well, I'm 25. I don't know how.
I'm 27.
Perfect.
Yeah. This is what it does to you when you get up every morning early. But I'm biased. I admit it. But I can't think of a lot of people better than Prince.
You know, and he means so many different things to so many different people because that career was so diverse and so wide-spanning. I mean, decades running, he did such interesting things. He was a musician. He was, you know, an unparalleled performer. He was a crusader. I mean, I heard you talking with Dean earlier. I mean, here's a guy who took on the major label machine and just unapologetically said...
By the way... A really bad idea. The right thing to do for him at the time and the right thing to do to feel better about yourself and look in the mirror, it cost him millions and millions of dollars. But as an artist, he couldn't deal with it anymore.
I mean, here's a guy with the absolute utmost integrity. I mean, when you look at his stance on streaming music.
Yeah.
I mean, he basically said about Apple won't pay me in advance and they get mad when they don't get my music. He walked away from that whole scene.
Right.
And just is. He was 100% behind his convictions.
Yeah, and Taylor Swift gets a lot of credit for reinventing the angry artist. She was in diapers when Prince was doing it.
For sure.
Yeah. Did you ever see him live?
I did, years ago, Airy Crown.
Yeah, and I'd forgotten about this, but there was a club in South Carolina, and this is 1983. I was like 21 years old, 22 years old. A club called Derriere's, and we walked in. Is that a cliche
sure
or what?
It was, yeah.
We walk in, and they're playing Prince music, and everybody's, you know, and I remember conversations like, who is this? That's how early it was, because the first album, I think, was 79 or 80, and then he blew up, obviously, in the 80s, and it was Prince's world, and we were just lucky to be in it.
Well, there was that carnal side to Prince.
Oh, yeah. Dirty Prince and struggling spiritual Prince, good Prince, bad Prince. It was all there.
I mean, as a young boy growing up in the early 1980s, it's the Dirty Prince that resonated the most.
I couldn't imagine going through puberty with Prince records. That must have been tough.
Yeah, try explaining to your parents listening to Darling Nikki. Oh, it's just about his
it's
girlfriend.
It's a cool song. It's a cool song about a girl named Nikki.
Well, there's that song. And if you go back to 1999, which is, you know, kind of a pretty standard album nowadays, but I remember as a kid listening to Let's Pretend We're Married off that album.
Sure.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, as a kid hearing that, it blew my mind. And then Erotic City not long after that.
right.
Talk
about
coming of age.
Right, and I said this yesterday, but the real key to me about how big Prince was in the coverage yesterday was to see Fox News yesterday at about 2:30 referencing the song Cream and playing a clip from it in the middle of a presidential campaign.
For real.
How about that? Can you hang around a second?
Absolutely.
All right, good. Let's do this. Take a break. Come back. More in a moment with James Van Osdell. Also, my friend Mark DiCarlo coming up. Steve Cochran, we continue at 720 WGN. $100, Dave, if you can name it.
Is this Delirious?
Sorry, Dave, you owe me $100.
Okay.
Prince Bat Dance from the Batman movie. That's right, I've won $100. From me? How does that work? James Van Osdell's here. He's a fellow recovering disc jockey, as I am. And this has been a tough year. It's been a tough year. We've lost some giants this year, man.
Well, we definitely have. And when Lemmy from Motorhead died, the response was very different. It was, oh, hey, what took him so long? But with Prince,
right,
I mean, this
right,
was
right.
so shocking.
Well, it was even shocking when Bowie died. And Bowie, sure. Was Bowie 70? He was 70. If he wasn't 70, he could see it from where he was. You know, and obviously Glenn Frey, even though Glenn Frey had been sick off and on.
My childhood's been gutted this year.
But why all this year? I know you don't get to decide, but it just seems like it's raining dead rock legends.
It's awful.
It is awful. I was hoping that I would be able at some point to go to a Prince concert and be disappointed in its performance and hoping that he had quit sooner. But that wouldn't have been for another 25 or 30 years.
Exactly.
I don't know. You got a lot of personal collection stuff with Prince? Are you a disc man?
I used to have tons of vinyl. And, you know, I bought all those records when they came out, Controversy, Dirty Mind, 1999, Purple Rain, Around the World, all that stuff. So I had all that, and I played it all the time. I took all of it to college with me.
Did you ever have the opportunity to have an angry meeting with a program director because you played Prince out of format?
Never, I don't think I've ever played Prince on the radio, which is so weird.
I
was going to
say, because you love the music, but you were never in that format, were you?
Well, but that's the thing. Prince, to me, broke all formats.
Yeah, that's true.
And maybe that's what program directors had such a hard time with. I mean, here's a guy who clearly could rock, was soulful, R&B, dance. I mean, he really straddled it all. And program directors, I mean, you know, the weasels who run radio
stations.
They're
all geniuses.
Yeah, that's right. They're all geniuses. I mean, they don't know what to do with that.
No.
It's much easier to say, play this band that checks this box. But Prince transcended it all.
Yeah, and I'm glad you got a chance to see him live, because seeing him live, and I don't mean to rub this into people that loved him and never did, but seeing him live was seeing, you know, there are people that never deliver live. They're great when they come out of the studio, and they're great when they're on your record, on your vinyl, on your disc, on your digital. But you go see them live, and you go, eh, Prince was better.
Yeah.
It's better. Springsteen, better.
Prince
better
was
live.
A show.
Yeah.
It wasn't a
you
performance.
Got it.
It was a show.
And one thing that came up earlier, and again, I was very lucky to see this firsthand, he could play every instrument. But in playing every instrument, it wouldn't have been a show if Prince had done it himself. I mean, he could get on the drums. He could tell Bobby Z back in the old days, excuse me, I'm going to sit there for a second. He could play the drums. But he put himself in with great hand-selected musicians that he changed too often, but hand-selected musicians, and then he just got out of the way and let them rock for a bit.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of those albums, I mean, he basically did himself.
Right.
One-man show.
Layered over layered.
Now, we're hearing a lot of stories. Now, Prince was the most reclusive, quiet superstar imaginable. We're hearing a lot of stories about how excruciating being a musician performing with Prince was. I mean, how Prince had such exacting standards that were in his head that he had to try and instill in his fellow performers, and it was maddening.
Don't you think that's kind of like, it's like Michael Jordan teaching you how to shoot? It's like Michael, you know, it's like anybody that's that level of genius. And there's a Michael Jackson documentary, in something something to Motown and back or whatever. It's been running off and on recently. But you see Michael Jackson trying to communicate to musicians and dancers what he's looking for. Prince trying to communicate to people what he's looking for. And this I didn't see, but I had a friend tell me a story of he goes in, and I don't know who was drumming at that point, but he goes and he goes, no, not da-da-da-da-da-da-da, no, da-da-da-da, da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Exactly.
You know, where you just throw it out, and then the more he had a da-da-da, the more agitated he'd get.
You know what I think?
How could you not get this?
Here's a guy who is so, you know, again, reclusive. He was working on a memoir.
Yeah.
I'm disappointed we'll never get to read that because here's a fascinating life that none of us really had access to. I mean, some rock stars or superstars live their lives out loud. You know everything they're doing. You see them everywhere. Here's a life that I find utterly fascinating.
Well, and he didn't have people that were always in the inner circle. You know, there were people that were in the inner circle for a period of time and they moved on. Like Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis were pals of mine. They produced Janet stuff, and they left the original First Avenue band, and they were pals with Prince through the years, but they moved on, and the people from the New Power Generation moved on, and the people from the last thing, he kept updating the players. He had a little bit of band ADD, right, where he kept putting in new people. And the interesting thing is, if this does come back as a dark conclusion to what happened, it's going to be because of these hangers-on that always seem to be somewhere in the area. You know, he was loyal to a lot of people that made record companies nervous or people that had his best interests at heart nervous. But I never saw that dark side from him. But he did surround himself with people that maybe didn't help him all the time.
There is a seediness in the world of music that those sycophants who follow musicians around, it can be dark.
So, and what are you up to? Are you doing a weekend show here occasionally?
Yeah.
Okay.
I haven't been here for a while, but it's lovely to be here. By day, I work for Rivet Radio, which is a news organization.
Good partner of ours.
Absolutely. And I also do a little podcast in my car called Car Con Carne.
Good. Where do we find it?
CarConCarne.com. CarConCarne.
Okay, good. And you put up new ones every week?
Yeah.
Excellent.
Super fun.
Well, nice to connect with you, dude.
Likewise. Thanks for having me on.
I'll see you at the disc jockey meeting.
Yes, sir.
Another pal of mine, Mark DiCarlo, is in town doing a show this weekend. We'll give him a plug before Bill and Wendy coming up at 10 on 720 WGN. Nothing more powerful than seeing the pretty girl and you don't quite have the guts to go talk to her. Up-tempo, down-tempo, funky, ballads. Man, the man can do it all. Steve Cochran Show continues. 9:52. I don't know if I told this story on the air, but this, again, goes back to the early 90s. So I was asked to do some stuff at Timberwolves games on court. And Prince was pretty good basketball player. Could shoot. Mm-hmm. You know, you wouldn't want him posting up because he was tiny. Prince was out with a player at the time that was a fairly big deal in the NBA. Didn't last all that long, and he's passed on, as a matter of fact, a guy named Manute Bol.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I heard of him.
From Africa. Didn't speak a lot of English. And just minutes before, I had inadvertently tripped him with a microphone cord, and he wanted to pound on me. So he was in a bad mood to begin with.
Was that the same night?
Same night. Yeah, and Prince was there, front row, and Prince wanted to meet Manute Bol. Now you'd have picture of this because everybody have a camera, on your phone.
Yeah.
So I turn around and I see Manute Bol, who was, what was he, 7'8", Dave?
I want to say 7'6", maybe.
7'6".
Somewhere.
Yeah, and Prince, 5'1".
Yeah. On a good day.
It looked like Manute Bol took his son to the game.
He could have put Prince in his pocket.
It's amazing. Yeah. So, but he loved sports. As a matter of fact, everybody thinks purple. Well, you know why purple? There was no big artistic choice with purple. He's a Viking fan. Mm-hmm. He was a huge Vikings fan. It's 9:53. Mark DiCarlo standing by. He's in town this weekend, and I highly recommend you go see him at Mark DiCarlo. You're not just doing shows at your hotel, right? You're actually going out and doing it somewhere?
I sure am, Steve. And you know what? I got myself a new office chair this week, too, and I'm ecstatic.
You know what? I appreciate you one-upping me because your line's better.
No, you know what they say, and they've said it forever. If your butt's not happy, you're not happy.
It's a very good point. It's a very good mm-hmm. point. Now, first off, condolences on your loss. I know you were, you've got some emotional things going on in your world, and I'm sorry to hear that. But in the meantime, I'm thrilled that you're in town. Where are you going to be performing?
Well, Steve, I'm going to be in town raising awareness for a very important group in Chicago. You know, Chicago is famous for comedy. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And because of all the recent success of the Chicago sports teams, no one's going to comedy shows anymore, Steve.
Right.
It's very difficult. We're throwing no-hitters, playoff games. But mm-hmm. there are comedians all over the city working hard. And I'm going to be doing shows out at the Comedy Shrine in Aurora, doing Whose Line improv shows.
Oh, cool.
To give something back.
It's very nice of you. Normally I'd get invited to those, yet I don't feel like I got an invitation to this one.
It happened relatively quickly, Steve. we're racing. That's part of the awareness thing. So I'm making you aware of it right now.
I thought you were becoming aware you didn't want me at the show.
No, I would love to have you there. Here's the problem. I invite you every time, Steve, and you big league me. You know, the one time you went to Applebee's, the other time you said you were getting your hair done.
Did we not have a great time, the show we did together? We had a fabulous time.
We had because you were hilarious.
Except for the really awkward moment where you were on my lap. But, I mean, therapy can help you forget that.
You know what? That's true. I need some laughter this week, so I want to go to the Comedy Shrine and do that show. And people need to get out. And forget about sports for a while. What's the big deal? It's just the playoffs.
Well, here's the situation. Tonight, you're going to be fine. Tomorrow night, you're up against the Hawks game. So here's what I want people to do. I want you to DVR the Hawks game, and I want you to go see my friend Mark DiCarlo. What are the show times?
The show times are at 8 and 10. And that's the best way to watch live sports is DVR because your friends won't text you or anything.
That's exactly right. And it's not like you're going to be checking on your phone while you're on stage. You wouldn't do that.
No, I wouldn't. What we do is we have a screen at the back of the room where the audience can't see it because it's behind them.
Are you going to be in town just for the weekend? When are you leaving? I should say, if Andre are asking, what would the truthful answer be on when you were leaving?
Oh, well, we're arriving Saturday, and then we're leaving Tuesday because then Yenny and I, my lovely wife and co-host of the Fork on the Road travel show, we are going down to New Orleans to do a show from there. The Jazz Fest, perhaps America's greatest party.
Have you met Yenny?
She is the sweetest person.
And he's so over his skis.
Ever. Oh, big time. I love Mark. But
beautiful, funny, talented. What's she doing
She's
with this
so
schlub?
So cool. Love her.
That's what everyone says.
Oh, is it? Is he still?
He heard.
Oh, I didn't believe he heard. Oh, what a shame he heard. all right, buddy. I love you. Just get here safe, and I'm going to try to come see you tomorrow night.
Oh, I would love that, Steve. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. And laughter is the best medicine.
Well, with that kind of plug, who wouldn't show up? Comedy Shrine.
Fantastic. What do you want?
Comedy Shrine at Aurora tomorrow night at Mark DiCarlo, where you can get information on the podcast, too, And the Fork in the Road podcast is great. It's the funniest cooking book, book about food, I mean, ever.
They're ever. Great. Yeah.
Couple of minutes, 4:10. Bill and Wendy are next. This is 720 WGN.